Hi, I'm Margie Haber. I've been an acting coach for 30 years, helping actors find their personal power and learn to create. Let's face it, all of us need to let go of control, get rid of the straitjacket we call our comfort zone, and remove the walls that prevent us from being vulnerable. It's all about hope. So let's begin this journey together and give ourselves permission to fuck your comfort zone. Well, I must say, today is an adorable day because my little Chris, who isn't little anymore, has agreed to be on my podcast. Hello, if it isn't my darling Chris Schellinger. I said it right, didn't
I? You did. I'm very well, thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. And I just want to give my audience a little bit of information about who you are so we know. So Chris Schellinger, said right, is an actor, you're a model, and one of my wonderful teachers.
I am.
Great combination. You've been a top model finalist on America's Next Top Model, umpteen commercials, and did such films as NY84, They Found Hell, Wineville, and an upcoming feature first role in drag, which I know we can't talk about, seeing you have signed an NDA.
I have, but I'm very excited for everyone to see it. I think it's going to be a great little project. I'm excited for it.
I can't wait. And later, I'm really excited to talk to you about your recent role on Hacks.
Yes.
But before we do all that stuff, I think it would be good for everyone to know, you know, what was it like to be young Chris as far as in the business, and when did you get started and how you got started?
Yeah, absolutely. I started acting when I was very young, about 8 years old. I did my first play and discovered that there are no small parts, only small actors, because I wanted one part. But I ended up being cast in another part and stole the show with my one line. Thank you very much. And since then, I've been hooked. So I pursued it at in Houston. I'm from Houston, starting around 14. And then, you know, quote unquote, discovered in Houston by my manager. And she took me out to L.A. for pilot season.
Wow. What was that like? I mean, 14.
Oh, my God.
Many years ago.
So exciting. The first day or the first audition was on CBS Radford lot. I saw Hyde from that 70s show. I was like dying and it was like, you know, being thrown to the wolves. But I've always felt like it was something I could handle and wanted to do. So it was the best day ever.
And how long did you stay here when you were doing that?
I was here for about 8 months. When I was 15, I moved and then turned 16 and then got some good bites. Was like between me and someone else for a big film, but it just didn't hit. So moved back to Texas, finished high school, and then decided to, I actually went to hair school for like right out of high school and did hair for a few. And then I had a traumatic brain injury.
And, what do you mean? What happened?
So I was at work for my salon, and I fell. Ooh. And when I fell, I hit my head, and I like had a skull fracture, and it caused a brain bleed. And so I woke up from that experience and just realized that life was too short to not chase your dreams. And made a plan to move back out to LA. And I've been back out here since I was 21, and I'm just turned 35 2 days ago. So
wow, happy birthday.
Thank you.
35. You, by the way, if anyone can't see him, but he looks 12 still. I mean, really. You never age. It's unbelievable.
I'll take it.
I'm curious. I wasn't going to ask you, but I'm curious. And when you say you came out at 14, 15, well, really young, did you come with your parent? Did you come? Who took care of you?
Yes, I came with my mom. Her company, she is a accountant, so she was able to remotely a little bit. And they gave her a leave of absence from her job.
Nice.
And then I lived with a person that I, a friend that I made out here for like the summer of that year. My dad came out for a couple of years, a couple of months, and my brother came out for a couple of months. He's a lot older than me. So
That's fun.
But, you know, so my family like took care of me. It was a big like burden on our family. But they did that for my dream, and I'm honestly forever grateful for it.
Do recommend that that people that age come out, do what you did?
I think that if it is the, you know, the creator, the actor's dream, why not get started when it's, you know, a little less saturated and a little more forgiving as far as like credits and things like that go? You can get your foot in the door a lot. I don't want to say easier, but I do think that if people are committed to it, then, you know, especially like at our studio, we nurture that passion.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a minute about your teaching. I'm very excited to talk to you about that. But I want to continue with you, because you talked to me about getting a part straight from a self-tape, working with Paul Schrader and Lindsay Lohan. And you, so can you tell me about that? It was in 2013. Self-taping was not as popular as it is today.
No, it was not. It was very selected, you know, as far as like who would self-tape or, you know, things like that. But they were launching, Paul Schrader and the production was launching this Let It Cast digital auditioning format or, you know, website. And they did all of the casting through this Let It Cast. And I was helping a friend go on tape, and he was like, you know what, you should go on tape, you should do it. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll do it. And luckily I had the Margie Haber phrasing technique in my back pocket and was able to script to my advantage. And just did one take of it. It felt really good. It looked really good. And I was like, as you say, fuck it, and send it in. And Paul Schrader, picked me out of, you know, the thousands that were auditioning, and ultimately gave the role that I auditioned for to a bigger name actor. But I did get a smaller role in the film, and it was just such an honor to work with all of those.
What do you think in that tape? I mean, you know, we didn't even know that much about self-taping. We can talk about self-taping later, but what do you think in your tape? Do you think it stood out? What stood out? Do you think that they saw it?
When I watch it again, because I do still have it saved, there's just a natural human element to it that doesn't feel forced. It just feels in the middle of life. And I think because honestly, I used the phrasing technique to my advantage. I didn't feel stressed. And so I was able to just relax into the role. And I think sometimes we're trying to perfect our self-tape so much that we like rehearse or get the life out of it. And I didn't compress it into this, you know, box that, you know, was a little more
controlled.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Controlled. Control
and
was able. Yeah. So you mentioned the Haber phrasing. You might as well explain what that is, because people don't know what you're talking about. Some people. What is that?
So definitely something that we use at the studio, but that you taught me. And it's you know, allowing the paper to be there, to use it to our advantage, to be in our behavior, stiff or, you know, make a big deal out of it. But when we go, we're alive and receiving from, you know, the other actor when we're in the middle of the slice. And then we can stay alive as we're scooping our, you know, phrases or lines off the paper. And it doesn't feel, it feels like we've had the slice for a lot longer than, you know, like I just did a you know, 1 day turnaround for 8 pages yesterday.
Wow.
You know, like by the end of some of the takes, yes, I was, you know, about 100% off book, but using the paper just.
Yeah.
To make, you know, to be alive. truly.
Somebody smart must have created that. I don't know who did that, for God's sake.
I don't know.
Margie Haber. Which brings me to, it's 2024. I'd like to know, when did you start studying with me? And how did you find out about me?
Yes. So it was 2013.
So it's 10, yeah. So it's about 11 years ago.
Yeah. So it's crazy. And I started with one of your teachers who's retired from teaching, Courtney Burr. And he just, I'd heard your name around town. I had gone to some other places prior to. I wish I would have started at the Margie Haber studio, because I would have gotten immediately out of my head and not doubted myself for one moment. But when I came to the studio, it was like a rediscovery of all the things that I got into acting for, you know, to be able to step into the shoes of another individual and tell their story and tell it truthfully, where other places it was just so much technicality, which I do think is, you know, important. And we do, you know, have some technical aspects to the way that we approach it, but it's so much more about human behavior and living a life. You know, it was just freedom of that.
I call it structure rather than technical, because structure allows you to be messy. You have to have structure, and you have to know, if you're doing a self-tape or a Zoom, you do have to have the structure of it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And you taught me about, you know, creating that frame, that structure for myself and attaching myself to that and not scattering myself.
Exactly.
You know,
I do remember you in class, because we both have something in common. We love being scattered. You know, it's so easy to get out there and just scatter ourselves. So for you, both of us, structure is such an important part. I mean, then one day I said to you, Chris, would you like to teach? Because you look like you're 12. I don't know how I ever asked you to teach, but I don't even remember how that went about. Do you remember that?
Yes. I was in Texas, actually, and I got visiting my family. And you called me and asked me, and I was like, yes, that sounds great. It was for a 7 to 9 year old class. That's where I started. And I was like, you know what? I'm having a great time with my nieces right now. Like, yes, you know, the universe is calling. And I've been very fortunate to have amazing teachers like you, and, you know, school teachers and drama teachers and modeling teachers, all sorts of teachers that just have really impacted my life. And I wanted to kind of pass that baton. And it's so rewarding for me, teaching. I love it.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is I remember it's different times that I would walk into the room, your room, and you'd be teaching these very young people, even though now you teach teenagers, you teach adults, you teach everyone. But during that time, you'd have like this board, I think, and you had like these windows and creative stuff all over it. And the kids were having fun. I always say that, first of all, it should be fun for a 7 to 9 year old and any age above that. Fun, enjoy it, love it. I also feel that if you're going to come, you don't want to just play, you want to learn. So I am curious to know the difference between when you teach a 7 to 9 year old versus a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old. What do you do in a 7 to 9 year old so that it's not just, let's just play?
It's really interesting because there's kind of a switch that happens now teaching kind of all ages. It's a switch that happens where like the 7 to 9 year olds, they have this very vivid, delicious imagination, and they can be a dragon or, you know, all the things. But then there's this kind of point, I feel like, I don't know, around 10 or 11, where they start to kind of retreat and second guess themselves. So the 7 to 9 year old, it's getting them to, let's get into our imagination about this character, about this life, about this environment that we're in. And creating structure within that space, you know, a guided place to tap them into the life. And same thing for the older ones. You know, we're doing specific kind of exercises in that field, but there's a, it takes a little more, I don't want to say coaxing, but like a little more of a, all right, come on. You could, you know, the nurturing parent ego state, you know, to kind of nurture it out of them. But then once you've opened the can of worms, oh boy, it's open. So
watch out, watch out.
I have this student right now and she is just a hoot. She will be doing an exercise. I'll warm them up and she'll bring out these amazing characters and she and I will just kind of play back and forth. And it's fun to see them open up and find their power. I'm sure you have
absolutely.
The same.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just love the way you teach. I love the enjoyment and I love the fact that you love it. Otherwise, why bother being a teacher? You know, I have so many teachers. I have like 14 teachers and every teacher I have loves what they're doing. And if you're just doing it because of for a paycheck, it's kind of unfortunate. But if you do it for the joy of seeing people grow, I think that to me has always been the reason for it. And I'm just so glad that you're a part of my studio for so many years, for God's sakes.
Well, crazy. Thank you so much.
I want to talk about your audition for Hacks. Let's talk about that first. And then we can get into the other stuff you and I want to talk about. Tell me about that audition for Hacks.
So it was in drag. I've been auditioning more in drag and I found a new manager who just really understands me and knew that I identified as gender fluid and started finding me, you know, roles and things to explore that side of myself that I shut away for a very long time. And with Hacks, it came in and one, it's one of my favorite shows. I love that show so much. So I was dying. And, you know, it's in the words of Dolly Parton, it ain't easy to look this cheap. So it's a lot of work, right? And so I got myself ready and was obviously, you know, really wanting this role. But as we talk about, you have to let go of that and just live the life. And so I really, you know, even though it was not the lead role, I still gave myself the power of creating that life. It was a self-tape. And interestingly, it called for a bunch of kind of technical moves and stuff. And I was like, I can't do that. Marju taught me better than that. So I gave myself something to do, a life to live. What am I doing these technical things? And it was so smooth. People on set were like, your audition was amazing. And it's just a testament to the way we approach things, I think.
Yeah, I just think that's interesting. We talk about movement, you know, people are so afraid to move. They don't want to do anything. They just want to have a complete close up and tight. I mean, if you have, you're actually doing something intimate and it's very romantic and very connected. But when you're actually auditioning for someone who's a drag queen who needs to be in their body,
space,
makes no sense whatsoever. And what I always say, move with purpose. And that's what you're talking about, moving with purpose, which really helped you. So let's get into, you and I had a conversation the other day, which was why I was so happy to do this with you. And I so appreciate that you trust this platform to talk about your days as a child when you knew you were different than other boys. And how, I'm glad you also mentioned fluid, because there's such new terms today than there used to be. But I'd love to just, for anybody, the people that are listening that might also have the same feelings when they were young or have suppressed it, or if parents have, you know, that kind of a child who's maybe struggling, but they don't notice. I'd just like to hear your story about what it was like when you were young and when, you know, and what your parents did and all that stuff, if you don't mind.
When I think about it, I go right back to, I'm 3 years old. I'm in my mom's blue dress and I have a blue parasol and I'm like strolling down my sidewalk in my front yard, and my brother's playing basketball, and I'm like,
hey.
And the girls watching him play basketball on the street are like, oh my God, who's your little sister? And he's like, that's my little brother. And my brother was always very supportive of me in that way. Like, I never felt shame around that. And my mom or my parents never truly, in my memory, made me feel shame about that. But I knew that it caused an issue in society. I knew that it was not something that, like, other boys were doing. But I never felt like it was just a part of me. It was an innate part of myself that it gave me joy. It really gave me joy. And I made the active decision to, like, not do that at one point. And I can't remember why. Maybe it was conversations I heard or something I saw on TV. I don't know. It was also like Matthew Shepard time. So, like, you know, like,
what does that mean? What does that mean? Matthew Shepard
on the news, the kid that was killed for being gay. So there was, like, you know, news articles about all of that. So I don't know what caused it, but I definitely made an active choice to not embrace that side of myself. In addition to also feeling, you know, gay and trying to understand that. And, I don't know, just throughout my childhood, there have been, like, moments. Like, I went out in drag when I was, like, 12. And I went to this house, and granted, this is in Texas, and it's kind of rural Texas. But this woman, she said, oh, my God, and what are you, little girl? Are you a good? And I was like, no, I'm a girl. And she was like, oh my God. And then she brought her husband out. And so it felt like it was this scene. And I was like, I'm not doing this to make a scene or to be funny or to be humorous. It's an expression of myself. So it was kind of confusing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, struggle just being gay in the United States and Texas of all places. And you just repress, I would push that part of myself away. And started to kind of identify. And, like, when I went to hair school, like, I cleaned out, as I say, and I was expressing myself in the way that I felt like. I just felt super okay to be as feminine as I wanted to be. I felt like it was a safe place for me. Mm-hmm. But then I'd leave that kind of closed group, if you will, where I felt safe, and go out into the real Texas world and felt like I had to hide and was, like, chased by these dudes in a like gigantic truck. And this isn't like a kind of major city in Texas, outside of, and so struggle. And privately, I didn't feel shame about that, but in public, I would feel shame about that. And felt like I had to butch it up or, you know, pass in a certain way. And I found that I was able to do that in, you know, many ways. And then when I moved back out to Los Angeles, the business was not as open with gay actors. If someone knew you were gay, it's not like you would, you know, be in trouble or blacklisted or something, but it was a hush hush situation, you know, a don't ask tell situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And at that point in my life, I, you know, fully accepted who I was as a gay man, but was still repressing that kind of gender fluidity that, you know, I as a child. And I, like, wouldn't do gay roles. I, you know, left agents for pushing me for gay roles.
Wow.
Straight roles. Yeah, I've definitely cut my nose off despite my face. For the wrong reasons, you know?
And what were the reasons why you said no to those roles?
I felt like it was going to pigeonhole me into being this gay actor, which at the time, you know, those stories were not necessarily like My Private Idaho. You know what I mean? That's a great film. They weren't that. It was, you know, some stereotypes, some caricature of gay life. You know, now we have Fellows Travelers, which is just, oh my God. Have you seen that?
So beautiful.
You know, like I cried for...
Yeah.
You know,
I know. I watched it. It was so well done, and and of course, you know, you get a chance to see them as real people in love. We don't see gender; we just see love and romance and play and fun, and also all the struggles that they had during what was it during the 50s, 60s?
Yeah,
what
like
was
50s, it? 60s.
Which was, of course, was where you're with the same concept as what you're talking about. When you came out here, even though it was in 50s, 60s, it still was the same concept versus now.
It's not as progressive as people would like to think. And I'm not sure what necessarily flipped in the industry. I can't really like recall a specific moment. I know recently Moonlight, you know, kind of changed things.
Yes.
But, you know, other things too, for sure. But for me personally, I was on America's Next Top Model and I met, the first trans person that I had ever met in my life.
Wow.
And just shifted my whole worldview. You know, I think had I known that trans people existed when I was a kid, or that validity was a thing, that even when I was a kid, that gay people could have a like meaningful and productive life and work. Yeah. Relegated to the shadows of society.
Yeah.
Had I known that, I think that I wouldn't have struggled and wouldn't have repressed myself for as long as I have. And, you know, honestly, through meeting her and allowing my feminine self to become one with my masculine self, you know, it's like I had built and known this side of, you know, Chris for so long, but this person, you know, this other side of myself was begging to be seen and heard. And I started to kind of experiment like on Halloween, like doing drag and things like that. And then it was like, I was going out every weekend in drag because it just made me happy. And I felt that I was getting back in touch with her, you know, the woman inside me. So who again has opened up so many doors recently, you know, back to Hacks and like the film that shall not be named. it has freed me to tell these stories that I've always wanted to tell. There's always this like part of myself where like I've identified with actresses over actors and I never understood it. And I'm starting to understand that now. Like I'm starting to understand like who I am even more. And it's really helping me find my kind of bringing.
So what I'm hearing, what a great story. Thank you, Chris. And you know, I appreciate that you allowed yourself to, I think it's part of your growth where you are right now. Like this is the great time to do this podcast because I really believe you've now been able to say, I have all pieces of me.
Yes.
And that's what characters are about, by the way.
Right.
We have all pieces of ourselves. And what's great is I sit across from you now and I would say if watching you, you combine all pieces of you. The masculine, the feminine, the funny, the intimate, all those pieces, and you don't have to deny any of them. So this is the time to let people know.
Yes.
So I guess the question also I have is, I wrote this down because I found this is really a really helpful question if there are parents out there. Mm-hmm. If someone is a child who likes to dress up as a girl, how do they know if it's a phase or they actually are in the wrong body?
I think that every individual is different, obviously. For me, I think that visibility and like representation matter. And when you see yourself reflected in the world, you know that you have a place to go and a place to be seen and validity. So I would say embrace it. It's okay. It's not a bad thing. As RuPaul says, we're all born naked and the rest is drag. So
I guess the question I really have to cut to the chase is a parent has a child. Mm-hmm. The parent's child, the child is 6 or 7 years old, dressing in different, he's a boy, born a boy, I should say, dressing in clothes that are feminine, all that stuff. A parent will say, okay, what age, how do you know transitioning is very different than dressing in drag? I mean, when you're transitioning, you are committing to live the opposite gender of what you were born in. Okay. I would say that. And so here you are transitioning. How do you know? Do you have to be 18? Is there a certain age? I mean, this is the problem, you know, I've seen that happen, or a parent goes, or a kid goes, yeah, I want to do it. But then later on, life goes, I didn't know that myself well enough to actually answer that question. Do you know what I mean? How do you do that? What do you do as a parent? When it comes to trans, not being in drag. Right.
Yes, because they are two totally different things. And in California, right, because, there are bills and anti-trans legislation being passed across the country, which is really scary. I think that it is up to the parent and their medical professionals to make any sort of transition decisions. Many times, if it is a trans individual, they're experiencing, gender dysphoria, and it gets to a place of not being happy. I was able to find happiness, in my masculinity, where I think that people and individuals trans are not happy and cannot find joy. But when they either change their name or their pronoun, right, especially for minors, just changing a pronoun in their dress, right, like how they present the world or to the world, makes a complete, night and day difference. So
I see.
Just being there for your child and letting them move through that. You don't have to make any sort of medical decisions for a long time. And there's puberty blockers that people can go on that will stop like male progression into puberty or female progression into puberty. And you can make those decisions when you are an adult. I would wager to say that most individuals who are feeling that way end up taking medical transition routes and are so much happier, right? There is a percentage of people who don't, but most of that comes from society and like parents who are not accepting things like that. I think just allowing your child or someone in your life, a friend or whatever, to just expand their consciousness. I went through the same thing where I felt like I was trans, and maybe I like I was saying, just allowing that individual to express themselves in any which way they would like and be supportive in that. And no drastic measures have to be taken for there's no timeline as far as that goes. That's up to everyone in there.
So yeah, I'm hearing this, and I'll sum up about parents and the trans. And I guess it's great if you can embrace your feminine side and you're a boy, or your masculine side and you're a girl, and live in it for a while, experience it, find the joy, and then slowly you'll know, because not everybody who dresses in drag wants to become their opposite gender. And I think they have to individually take their time and slow down the process. All right. Now I want to give me advice. We always end my podcast with advice, and I'd love to have just a quick advice as an actor, then a quick advice as a teacher, and then as a fluid man. I think we did the fluid man. I think we finished that. Right. Cool. So let's go to actor and teacher? Can you give a little advice as an actor?
As an actor, I would say kind of what we're talking about, embrace your imperfection, the pieces of you that, you know, the pieces of ourselves that make us special or what's going to make our character special, and leaning into that and leaning into all the sides of yourself, you know, the light, the shadow, the every piece of you is valid and special and makes you who you are. And the more that you allow that light to shine, the more powerful you are.
I'm going to end with that because it's the same thing that you'd say as a teacher. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you being here. Thank you for sharing your truths.
Oh my gosh. And, thank you so much.
And I love you. And I've loved you all these years. And yes. Let's all love live the life and fuck your comfort zone, which the way you certainly have done today. I hope today's podcast inspires you to stay open, let go of control, be present, and above all, be kind to yourself. If you'd like to explore more of my philosophy in the studio, go to MargieHaber.com. And if you want to purchase a copy of my book, Fuck Your Comfort Zone, is available on Amazon. Stay tuned for our next episode.